Hello and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. This is your host, Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for joining us today. This episode of Ahead of the Curve is brought to you by New Era. New Era is the official headwear provider of the MLB, NFL, and NBA. If you love to rock New Era caps as much as I do, then you don't want to miss out on this opportunity to wear what the players wear and get 15% off. Go to neweracap.com/AOTC and use the code AOTC at checkout. That's 15% off your order using promo code AOTC. On today's show, we have on Dr. Barry Davis, head coach at Rider University. Barry begins his 20th year at Rider University in 2024, and during his tenure, Davis has transformed the program into a consistent contender in the Metro Atlantic Conference, winning 4 conference tournament championships, 2 regular season championships, and qualifying for 12 conference tournaments. The 2023 season was one of unprecedented success, and the Rider Bronx tied a school record with 36 wins, highlighted by regular season wins on the road over 2022 national runner-up Oklahoma and nationally ranked Duke. The Bronx won their 2nd Liberty Bell championship and captured its 2nd conference championship in the past 3 years. Davis also picked up his 1,000th win this past season. So on the show, we discuss his PhD research over coaches and great teams in regards to leaders and leadership development, and we go through a year-long of player development in the Rider University program. You're going to love this episode with Barry Davis. Coach Davis, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I'm really excited to get to speak with you today, and I think we'll just get started with the heavy hitters, which is your PhD and your dissertation paper over leadership and coaches. And I, you know, that's really what drew me to you in the first place. And I'm really excited to get to share the listeners with you today. So if you could tell us a little bit about, you know, what you studied within that. I know that was really hard earned. And so let's go ahead and dive into that.
Well, the first thing that, that I found that I was really interested in, I've always been interested in, is coaches, not necessarily coaching, but coaches and the great coaches and the great programs and how certain people, men or women, could take a program that struggles and be able to turn it around where other people have taken over programs very similar or the same program and has not been successful. So what makes that particular person, that particular coach, what does he or she do that can transform a program from a losing, a perennial loser, to a recurring or sustainable winner? Mm-hmm. And then to be able to establish a culture that supports the transformation. So being a baseball coach, my schedule aligns with baseball coaches. It doesn't align with football or basketball or soccer or lacrosse or, you know, those types of sports, team sports, hockey, I guess. I mean, so I tried to narrow it just to baseball, which made it a little easier to get data. Mm-hmm. I selected 9 coaches that, in my view, who had taken over programs that had struggled and transformed them into winning championship level programs. And they were able to sustain that program for a number of years. And certainly they're continuing to do that as we speak today. So being a baseball coach, you know, had connections. I've been doing this for over 30 years. So I know a lot of people and was able to align and get with 9 coaches. And we focused on their experience in transforming their program and the culture that they built to mm-hmm. maintain it. And that really was the dissertation surrounded those two areas. Those were the two research questions, mm-hmm. which was going back again, the experience in transforming it from a loser to a winner, and what was the culture built to maintain and support the transformation to continue it, you know, moving forward. And I came up with 5 pillars that now has sort of developed into 6 because I've taken one and kind of split it up. And those pillars are: 1, most important is leadership and leadership development. That was the number one factor that the coaches, you know, when they spoke to me, they felt that was the most important. Two was consistency. Three was communication and consistent communication. So they were kind of tied together, but I split number two into two and three. So consistency and communication. And number three was standards and expectations. Number four was the right fit, the right people. And number five was a growth mindset. So there's actually six: leadership, leadership development, consistency, communication, standards and expectations, the right fit, and a growth mindset. And my theory is, as these are baseline factors that everyone needs, and they all have to be together. You can't not have one of them. I mean, if you pulled out expectations or standards, you're not going to be a championship program. If you pulled out a growth mindset, eventually someone will catch you and pass you because you're not keeping up. You're not changing, you know, day to day or month to month, year to year. If you pull out leadership, you're pretty much shot, since that was the most important. If you're not consistent, you don't communicate. All of these are factors that you have to have to be able to transform a program and to be able to sustain it. So in a nutshell, that's basically what it was. 9 interviews, face-to-face. I did it all face-to-face, coded the data, came up with the consistencies and the words that those coaches were in, you know, I want to say harping on, or mm-hmm. or just, you know, stressing that we need to do this, we need to do this, we need to do that. And I put it all together, and that's what I came up with.
Could you be able to share some of the coaches that you studied?
I mean, I interviewed Brian O'Connor at Virginia, mm-hmm. John Shepp at Virginia Tech, Dan McDonald at Louisville, Tim Corbin at Vanderbilt, Chris Pollard at Duke, Ray Tanner formerly at South Carolina, mm-hmm. Eddie Blankmeyer at St. John's, Gary Gilmore at Coastal Carolina. I'm not sure about did I Mike Bianco at Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. So, well, and the reason I wanted you to include that too is because it's not like you're studying. I mean, that's basically the who's who of college baseball, especially in that region and in the country. And so I'd love to be able to dig into, you know, practical takeaways from a few of those, just because, you know, you're not doing this just for the research. You're doing this for research and player development for yourself and your team.
Correct.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, and you could use examples that they used, or you could use different things that you've taken away from them. But when you mention leadership development, you're talking about the coach, but also the players, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So how do you continue to grow? And then how do you grow leaders within your program?
Well, that's a very good question. And I think it's an ongoing type thing where, you know, like I have 4 players that I would consider my captains, although we don't necessarily put a C on their chest and they walk around, but I do meet with them and, you know, we put them in situations where they're in charge of players. They're more verbal. They talk, give them opportunities to handle situations at practice, off the field. I mean, it, you know, they've been in the program for 3-4 years, some mm-hmm. cases 5 with COVID now. This is the last year. Mm-hmm. And they have a real feel for me, and they're an extension of me and what I want. So mm-hmm. that's one of the things I stress to those players is like, look, I mean, you have to be an extension of what my voice is, what I'm saying, what are the coaches saying, sure. you know, because if we're not on this, we're not aligned and we're not speaking the same consistent language, you right. know, there's going to be holes, there's going to be gaps. I mean, there's little things like when I send out a text message or an email, I may just send it to those 4 guys, or I may send it just to one and say, look, can you take care of this today? Make sure this gets taken care of. And they do that. And another thing, and we'll get into probably later, is that I want to make them feel, I want to make all of them feel important. And I want to make sure the captains and the leaders of the team understand their role and how important it is for them to model, championship behavior, which is, you know, we want to do things right. We want to do things, first class as best we can. And then if we step out of line, that those things happen, then it's up to the coach or the other leaders to maybe pull them back into alignment, with what we're doing. We want them to be independent, but we want them to work like interdependently within the group setting. And I think that's something that's, it's just a, it's a day-to-day thing. You talk to them, more, you try to get, you know, if you can get your best players to play hard, if your best players work hard and practice hard and do the right thing, you got a chance. If they don't, you got a problem. And now you got to address that, you know, pretty quickly. So, you know, some years we haven't had great leadership, and usually when you don't have great leadership, you don't win. You're not successful. So that is, that is very important.
No doubt. So with that, you also mentioned consistency. Is that like on an everyday, I'm sure this is multiple forms of consistency, but I'm thinking like consistency with the head coach and the staff as much as possible, but also on a daily basis, like you're being consistent with your words and your actions, and you're not like saying one thing and doing another. Was it one or the other? Was it both? Like, can you go a little bit deeper into that?
I think it's both. I think with programs like ours, we're not, I'm the only full-time coach. So a lot of people find that hard to believe, you know, because we have been successful in the last couple of years. However, my assistant coaches who are part-time work as if they're full-time. They're at, you know, they're at the practices, they're at the weight training sessions, they're at the skill sessions, they're in the meetings. So they're there. And it's very important that we, and I try to do this a little bit more deliberately, and I'm aware of what I'm saying and trying to make sure that we're all talking the same language, in practice, and the terminology that we use. Is something as simple as, you know, reading a ground ball, reading the ball off the bat, we would have a term for it, say down angle instead of contact, which you hear on TV with, you know, professional baseball. We don't call it contact. We go on the ball going down off the bat, down angle. That's just our terminology. So the players will say that, you know, so they won't say anything different because that's what's been embedded in them. That's something really simple. But the idea is to, you know, be the same we can be the same person we can be every day as best we can. Be prepared. Practice starts at this time on Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. A little different on Fridays because of class schedules. But we don't have any inconsistencies. We don't, you know, throw them a curveball, you know, too often, because curveballs happen, you know, throughout the year. We don't have to do it ourselves intentionally. It's just going to happen. So we talk about that. That's a kind of a make the adjustment, an MTA is what we call it. You know, we just got to make the adjustment here. But those are some small examples of how we try to stay consistent. You know, our practice times, we try to keep at 2 hours, which I've learned over the years is more, it's more optimal that way than to go 3 hours. Of course, we have limitations, but, you know, there was a time we didn't have limitations and we practiced until, you know, the coach was satisfied. You know, not necessarily the players, but, you know, so I think those are the consistency on a day in, day out basis and how we handle problems and how we handle issues, you know, the same way each time, although there are different problems and different people and how you handle them. You got to know your people. You got to be able to read the room. You know, all those are factors that the coach has got to be constantly working too. It's just not a, you know, I show up and just, you know, I'm on, you know, autopilot. You know, I'm trying to be better too. I'm trying to be aware of things. Right. So I think it's a challenge, and it's, you know, if you think of it that way, and we try to pay attention to as many little details as possible, and it's really helped so far.
No doubt. No doubt. Well, I do want to commend you on the morning meditation walk. I think I can't remember exact pre-practice walk. I can't remember the exact verbiage that you used, but I really like that was a takeaway that I was like, that's a really neat idea. As you're walking, you're like setting the tone in your own mind about how you want practice to go and how you're going to be. I really thought that was neat.
Well, I appreciate that. And my wife's a mental performance coach. So we talk often about things like that. And And I, years ago, my office got moved. It used to be out next to the field, but then now it's a little further away. I could drive to practice. It's mm-hmm. not very, it's not too far. But I said, you know, let me walk. And I like to walk because it gives me a chance to clear my mind and get myself in position. And I call it the self-talk walk. Don't know where that came from, but it sounded good.
That's what it was. That's right. I like it. It's catchy.
And I do it every day. And I think one of the key things with the mental side is that if you do something, make it a habit and you think about it and you talk to yourself and you self-talk and being positive, and this is the way I'm going to be today. You do that on a consistent basis. You're going to be a better performer at practice. And I think one of the things I learned in a brief conversation I had with Dr. Wade Gilbert, who is a professor at Fresno State University, who's done numerous research articles on coaching. And I would consider him an expert on the science of coaching. I think that's how they label it. And he was stressing to me that, you know, coaches have to perform too. You know, we want our players ready, but the coach has to be ready. I have to be ready. And I think that's a really cool kind of way of thinking that, hey, I got to be on my game today as well. I have to be focused. I have to be locked in. And I think that makes you feel a little bit more like you're in the game. You're not coaching the game. You're not the coach. You're actually part of it. It's just the way I think of it. And the way he told me that, it just made so much sense. So I think a lot of coaches don't think of it that way. Maybe they do, but you're performing. You're actually, you know, if you have a great day, you know, there's a good chance your team's going to have a great day. So I'm going to make sure I'm ready to go. And that self-talk walk is a kind of a small step in having a great practice, which if you have a great practice, you have two great practices and you have a good week and then you have a good month and then you have a good semester and then you have a good year and you just, you know, it compounds, which is what we're trying to create when we do these on a day-to-day basis.
Sure. No, really good. And a good reminder for me too, because I feel like I'm running around like crazy all day, and just to take a breath to remind myself, you know, why I do this stuff. And then, you know, once we start practicing, you remember, you know, the reasons why, because that's the best part of our day. And you know, that's why we got into it in the first place. So with, you know, with that, I want to get into just some development. So like, you know, I hear different podcasts and I was like, okay, like, you know, this guy's a doctor and he did his dissertation over good coaches, and that's cool and all, but you win too. Like, it's not like you've won a lot in your career. So that's why I think that you are a very, you know, a great candidate for the show, but also, you know, somebody that I think we need to learn more from, is because you don't just, you know, do the research and kind of write a book about it and get out of the way. You've also won, what was it, over 1,000 games now? Yeah. Your 1,000th win this past season. So it's not like you're not using any of this stuff. You're just doing research. It's like you're using this on a daily basis. So let's talk a little bit about this fall. Like, what have you guys gotten into so far? And then kind of how have you progressed since the guys have gotten on campus?
Well, we had a very good team last year. I mean, you could make an argument that it's a debatable, you know, all the teams that I've had there, that this team was one of the best, if not the best. It certainly was the most accomplished team. Who mm-hmm. put themselves in a position to possibly, you know, we were a couple feet away from playing in a game to get to the Super Regional, which is a great what's the word I'm looking for, an accomplishment for this particular program and the level that we play at. So that was very exciting. But now this year, we lost a lot of guys. We lost, a big portion of our offense. We lost our closer, who was an All-American. We lost one of our better pitchers, starting pitchers. So, you know, we're in a kind of a small rebuild. However, you know, we do have some returners. We're young. So I think the development this particular fall is the focus on the things that we do a lot. Like, I mean, there's things that happen a lot in the game. Just simple things, simple stuff, secondary leads, hit the cutoff man, execute the rundown, understand how to run the bases at, you know, at each base. There is some bunting, there's base running incorporated in the bunting. just trying to keep it as simple as possible and stress those things that we have to be good at. Two strike hitting, you know, is something that we stress. And we've always stressed these things, but I think this year has been magnified a little bit because of our inexperience. We can't make it complicated. The more complicated we make it, the less our feet move. You know, a kid's standing there thinking about what to do instead of just reacting. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you're trying to get the unconscious competence, you know, level, which is when you don't think about it. You know it, but you don't think about it. And we're not there yet with a lot of spots on our roster. However, that's what the goal is. That's what the daily practice is. That's what the meetings are for. You know, it's a constant day-to-day building of a team, which I think I enjoy. That is what I enjoy, trying to rebuild the team, get a mindset of excellence, get a mindset that we want to be the best. And now we have to be good at all of these things, these fundamentals. And I think that's where our development is this particular year. Last year, we were older, experienced. It was more of a turnkey. We just need to be mentally prepared and be consistent. And I needed to put them in the right spot. And my coaches did an absolute phenomenal job. My pitching coach, Mike Petrowski, my my hitting coach, Lee Lipinski, both those guys were unbelievable for me.
Oh, I love that. Really good. So let's go with, you know, what have you guys done as far as like a team development since you guys got back this fall? So talk to us a little bit about, you know, practice design. You're obviously turning over a ton on the new roster. So where have you guys chosen to spend your time? And then, you know, what are just some different things that you guys did that feel like are pillars for you in the fall to develop your players?
Well, each year we come up with a theme, you know, a t-shirt that we like to wear when we work out. You know, we lift weights or we do any type of conditioning. Everybody has the same thing on. I think that's one of the big things that we do is we want some uniformity. You know, we go to practice, everybody has the same thing on for the most part. I mean, maybe, you know, long sleeve if it's cold, short sleeve if it's not, you know, depend. But for the most part, when we go lift or when we do anything team-wise, we all look the same. So our t-shirt this year says, we don't have to, we get to. Like, we don't have to come to practice, you get to come to practice. You don't have to play baseball here at Rider, you get to play baseball here at Rider. And I think that theme, which I stole from Dr. Rob Gilbert, a sports psychology professor at Montclair State, who basically the owner of the Success Hotline, which is a whole other topic. But we used that particular saying and we put it on the t-shirt, you know, with our logo and we wear it. And matter of fact, the senior players are the people who decided that's what we wanted. I let them do it, not me. I didn't decide. I let them decide. Because if they decide, then, you know, they have more of a tendency now to live it out. Whereas if I decided, I've sort of, and they may agree, but it's they take on a little bit more ownership with that. So that's one thing. The other thing that we'll have in a couple of weeks is we have what we call the Buck and Bronc. We're the Bronx, so we call it the Buck and Bronc. It's a kind of an obstacle course. It's a physical challenge, a run, you know, you're pushing sleds, carrying weights, crawling on the ground, it's sort of a physical challenge. They have a teammate and these teammates work together to try to win the contest. And then when they win the contest, they get a reward and that type of thing. So, that's kind of a team bonding, building, event that we've had every year. This year we'll read a book. Again, this is the second year we've done it, which I thought last year was we suggested it. Mm-hmm. I suggested it, and I said, "Hey, what do you think?" So last year we read John Gordon's Energy Bus, which okay. we put that into good use, and I think guys used it in a positive way. This year, our book is Chop Wood, Carry Water, mm-hmm. and that will be the book. And we just handed that out last week. And we will dive into that slowly. You know, we'll do it in meetings. We'll get the players to talk, and then mm-hmm. we'll try to, you know, use it as an educational tool to help our players understand the process of becoming excellent, becoming better. And that's essentially sure. what that is.
No, I like that. That's really good. Well, what are you guys doing this week? I mean, we're just now getting into November. Are you guys on a break? Well, you said, I guess you guys are still going through different things. You're going to do the bucking bronc.
Right.
And is that kind of your end of the fall?
That is the end of the actual, that's the day after our last actual skill practice. Like we have a practice this afternoon for about an hour and a half. We'll do two of those a week. And that'll be our skill portion of it. A lot of these guys are tired. I wouldn't say that sometimes we got to keep it down, keep it to the hours to a minimum. We do three. I think you're allowed four. A lot of these players have been playing since January, right. They played all spring and then they have summer ball. They come back, they get a couple weeks off and then they jump right into fall baseball. So, we're sort of winding down and I've never felt like we've been a poor team or we didn't play well because of the last two or three weeks in November.
Right.
So our conditioning is ramped up. Our weight training's ramped up. The pitchers are shut down. So we're kind of winding down and we'll pick back up here in mid-December when they're off on their own, when they're on their break, and then we'll start right back up in January.
Sure. No, that's really good. So, with this time of year too, if we could rewind just a little bit, you've got a lot of coaches who have changed jobs or, either changed jobs or maybe new to head coaching. And so I want to hit on that for a little while, because you've had such a vast experience of being able to do that at a very high level. So if you could go back or give yourself advice or give anyone else advice on that transition period and how you would want the first year to go, especially like the first fall, because you're kind of setting the tone for the rest of the year. But what are some different nuggets of information or just advice that you would give to the coaches listening who are going through that transition period right now?
Well, I think one of the things when you take over a program or when you start at a new place, and I would put myself in my mind, I would say, okay, I'm taking over the X program. What's the first thing I need to do? Or the first couple things I need to do, because there's quite a bit. One is obviously making contact with your players, getting to know your players, letting the players know that you know, I didn't recruit you necessarily, you're here, but I'm going to coach you as if I recruited you. You're my guys. Now we're going to have standards and expectations that are going to be maybe higher than what you're used to. Because in most cases, when you bring in a new coach, there's a reason, most cases, they haven't won or they have struggled. So there is some issues there that you need to work through. And one of the things I found in my dissertation, my study, was that the attitudes of the players was the number one barrier that the coaches found to be the biggest issue that they had to overcome was the attitudes of the players. Now the attitude could be, a bad attitude and they don't want to work hard. They don't have discipline, self-discipline. Talent level might be low. An attitude in the sense that they didn't know how to win. They didn't accept they accepted losing very easily, or they didn't, they just had a difficulty, following instructions or standards and guidelines from the coaches. Maybe they didn't have any. So there's the attitude, the overall attitude of the players was sort of the theme that I found amongst the nine coaches that I interviewed.
Sure.
And I think that's important. But when you take over, you're assessing the players that you have, you're making sure they understand that, hey, I'm going to coach you. And this is where we're at. This is what our standards are. This is what our expectations are. You might go into a room and sit with them and then go through what does a Ryder Bronc baseball player, what do you want them to look like? What are some of the things that are going to make up that particular player? What words are going to describe our program and the type of program that we want to be? What are they? And as we talk about it, you want to narrow it down to maybe three or four words. you know, an acronym if it fits. I mean, it's up to you how you do it. But I think that's one of the things. So right off the top of my head, you know, if I were to say it, I would say, all right, commitment. We're going to be committed to each other. We're going to be committed to the goals of the program. We're going to be committed to the values that we have. And what are those values? We're going to have grit. We're going to have toughness. We know we're going to work when things aren't going well. You know, grit would be maybe the word. Another word would be excellence. I mean, we want to be the best at everything we do. You know, first we'll be best, then we'll be first. That's something I heard years ago from Skip Burtman.
And, yeah, I like that.
So commitment, grit, excellence, those are three words that I jotted down that I thought, okay, that would be a generalization of what I would think about when I took over a program. And I think another thing that's important, depending on where you're at, if it's, you know, Division III, Division II, Junior College, Division I, who on campus am I working with? I mean, who are the people that are directly connected to our success? I need to meet with those people, maybe even in one big room, depending on the, you know, where you're at and whether or not you can or can't do it. But I want to meet with somebody in housing, residence life. I want to meet with somebody in admissions, you know, public safety, campus security, the equipment manager, the trainers, the conditioning guy, the weight training person. I mean, all of these people are going to be connected to our program. And if they're excellent, we want them to be excellent. And we also want to be consistent with what we're doing. And they have input and can help me formulate what I thought maybe I would do this. Now I'm going to do that because that makes more sense. And I think the other thing, as a coach, asking your assistants, asking the people that can help you, what do you think? Mm-hmm. I think so many leaders out there never ask the people who are actually in the workforce. Like, why wouldn't you ask the person that's actually working there?
Sure.
What do you think? Because I want to help you out and make it easier for you. I'm not going to tell you what I want. I want you to tell me what you need and what you want. And I think that's important. And I think we lose out that a little bit. So as a coach taking over, I want to get as much input from as many people that are connected directly to our program and our program's success as quickly as I can. I don't know, in your notes here, you put 100 days. I mean, you could write, you know, hey, this is the checklist of things I have to go through in addition to actually on-field playing. But it's a major task. But I think as a new coach taking over a program, it actually is a motivator. You know, sometimes you get stale when you're at some place for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, and then you get a new opportunity, a new challenge. And I think that's what that gets you going. And of course, the other factor, and we haven't mentioned it yet, is experience. The people who have put the time in it, put the years in, have made the mistakes. Like, I've made more mistakes than you can imagine. Now, a lot of those mistakes I won't make again. So I think it's very important for people that are hiring coaches to understand that experience counts a lot. And of course, winning is winning. You got to win.
Right.
But the experience, as someone who's been in the game for 25 years, 30 years, I wrote an article for Collegiate Baseball.
I saw that. Yeah. Thank you for doing that. It's their last episode or last.
Yes. Yeah. I had no idea for that either. So that's kind of, you know, that's ironic.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
But like a guy like Nick Saban, I mean, he won his first national championship. He was 51 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm at 51, 52, but he had been a coach for nearly 30 years. Mm-hmm. And people don't realize that it takes time to be great and to be excellent. So when they hire a coach who's been there, and has failed, you know, and I failed, you know, I mean, the running joke might be, I had a couple bad seasons. I had one guy tell me I had three bad seasons, and actually I had more than three, but I really only had two really bad seasons, you know? And so how did I turn it around? You know, we made a commitment. We made some changes. We reflected, we refocused, we looked at all these things. These are all the things that you learn through experience. And I'm sure guys like, you know, Saban, I mean, he obviously has made, you know, his mistakes too. Saban, sure. Skip Burtman was a high school coach for 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
John Wooden went 16 years at UCLA before he won his first championship.
It's crazy.
You know, so you can go on and on. There's a lot there, but taking over a program is exciting.
Yeah, I started thinking about that this weekend, you know, that really resonates, because you look at the turnover in just professional sports, college sports too, and I go, you know, I wonder what it would be like if they gave them, like, instead of like 4 years, they give them 4 years to do something, if they doubled it and gave them eight. I wonder if that would make a difference. And it may for some, and that, like, some people just may not be built for it or ready or be able to transition from assistant coaching to head coaching. But I do wonder, like, how big of a difference that would make.
Well, I mean, the more you do it, the better you get.
Sure.
You know, but you have to also pay attention to the mistakes that you're making, and understand that, you know, not everything I do is the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of ways to do it. I mean, I don't have to be right. I mean, my pitching coach did an excellent job. I didn't call one pitch, you know, but yet, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, they're talking to me, you know, about the game. You know, my pitching coach, when we, you know, my third base coach, my hitting coach, they, you know, they all have, you know, a say, and it doesn't have to be what I want. It's what we want. It's what do you think's best? Everybody gets a chance to get input. And I think as a coach, you're an assistant coach under, like, say, a great coach. Say if you're an assistant, say like a Mike Bianco who played under Skip Bertman, who worked under Skip Bertman for a short period of time. I mean, he obviously learned quite a bit and a lot of things, and he was able to implement those into his program. And I'm sure, and we have talked to Mike, and I have talked over the course of years, you know, there's things you change, there's things you learn because of mistakes. So getting thrust into a situation, like, I was a head coach at 24 years old, but I was also in a junior college that played 22 games the year before I got there.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have dugouts. The backstop was falling down. I mean, there really wasn't a program to for the most part. So I mean, I got a chance to mold it, fix it, but in the meantime, make a lot of mistakes. I mean, right. I don't even know what I did. I mean, I don't even know what those mistakes were now, but I know I made a lot. But I was given that opportunity because I wasn't under the microscope like they are today. I mean, their coaches are getting fired. They just fired the football coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. He hasn't even finished the second season. Now, maybe it's probably a good move. I don't know. I mean, the record speaks for itself. He hasn't done very well, but I don't, but what I'm saying is he didn't get 4 years. He didn't get 5 years. He didn't get a chance.
Right.
I mean, the time to win is now. And that's another thing why, when you talk about coach selection, you got to get the right guy or gal, and you got to look at a lot of factors. You got to look at the experience. You got to look at, how they handle tough situations, and are they continuously wanting to grow within the position of the head coach?
Sure. Well, and, you know, one of your pillars is fit, right? You have to find the right fit. And some of those guys just may not be fit with the organization. Cause you know, you look at Pete Carroll, and he got fired and then built a juggernaut at USC and has since won a Super Bowl. I mean, and there's numerous examples of that, of guys that have not had as much success as warranted by the organization or, you know, the team, and then gone on to have successful careers. And it's just interesting. And I think that, you know, a fit is a huge one for sure. And it's obviously important to you and why you included it in your dissertation paper.
Oh, yes. I mean, I think of the years that we struggled, I would put the having people that did not fit top of the list. I think our standards and expectations are always the same. I've always had a growth mindset, maybe a little more now because I'm a little more in tune to what it means. But if you don't have the right people, you know, you can have all those other things, and you're going to struggle. And that's an important one. It was number four. It could even be number five on the list now. But I still think that's one of the top two, three that you need to have. You got to have the right people.
Right. For sure. So let's go ahead and let's get into some of your in-season stuff. So let's talk about, you know, you get your guys back from winter break, and, you know, we're praying that everybody does everything right and everybody comes back healthy and does what they're supposed to. So when you start in January, what's the focus? Where do you guys spend a lot of your time? And how do you know, or how do you, like, have a feeling whenever your guys are ready that you're able, you know, you're able to do X, Y, or Z, or you guys are able to accomplish this, that, or the other? Like, how does how does a coach who's been doing it for a long time know when his team's ready in January?
Well, you never know quite ready. I mean, you never, sure. you never know 100%. But I think what you do is you certainly, even like today, today's practice is part of next spring. I mean, if we're good today, there's, you know, we're doing something today that we're going to, you know, we're going to do in the spring as well. But the two of the most important things that we try to stress early in the season, because we're in the Northeast, so there, you know, winter sometimes can play havoc with our practice schedules. We have an indoor facility, fortunately, but we need to get our pitchers ready, and we need to get our hitters ready to see live pitching. And that's really the focus. If we had to pick two things, we have to do that. Because if you can't pitch, you know that, you struggle. If you can't hit live pitching, you know, see live pitching as much as possible, indoors is certainly much different than outdoors. So when we get opportunities to go out, we do. So the winter a lot of times will dictate what we can and can't do. I mean, I've actually in some years, I mean, we've had so much snow that we can't get on our turf field, which is a practice field that we have, that we have to go in the parking lot. We'll literally be hitting ground balls in the parking lot. So we've done that too. So I think the two keys are pitcher arm, get their arm ready, as game ready as possible, and then get our hitters ready. And then the other things, ground balls, throwing, team defense, you know, we hope that we've done enough, you know, previous seasons, the fall, and that we go into it as much as we can. But those are the two that I would say are the most important for us. Not necessarily someone down in Georgia or someone in Florida, sure, or Texas or Mississippi, Alabama. For us, it's get the pitcher ready and get the hitters as close to his game speed or ready as possible. And if we do that, then I feel like, okay, first weekend's always kind of a struggle, but every weekend we get a little better, a little better, a little better. And we try to take advantage of every single chance we can to get outside, even if it's really cold. We have to get out if we can. And the more we do it, the better we're going to be.
Sure. What's your stance, or what are some different things that you do to build like team cohesion? Some people call it team building, and, you know, getting, cause you know, your guys have some practices together, but you know, there's different stances that I think people have taken, and you know, just getting guys closer is always a good thing, and just understanding people's backgrounds and things like that. So I'm curious what your stance is on that, and then if you guys do anything in particular to, you know, for me, and I'll rant on this, time is the biggest one. Like spending more time together with all of your guys and all of your teammates is going to build more cohesion, and it may, you know, it may get guys a little too close, and they, you know, they battle with each other at times, but that's okay too. But with, you know, with that, I think constructing really good, because you're getting guys from all parts of the country too who may not know each other. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on how to build close, like a close knit team, and some team cohesion.
Well, I will say that I don't know if we do as good a job as we could. Some of the things that I know other programs do that I think they're just phenomenal, and I would do it if we had the resources. But I'll give you an example. If we had the resources, I think it's to take a trip. In our case, you know, we're our budget it limits us to some things. So the reading of the book, the group together, when we travel early in the season, we probably play our first 22 games on the road. So, you know, eating dinner together, being on the bus together, just meetings. I mean, there's, last year we did some community service with what's called a Miracle League, which is handicapped kids playing baseball. So I thought that was a good team building activity where we could actually, you know, let our hair down, so to speak, and go and work with, sure, kids who are not, mm-hmm, as fortunate as we are.
That's wonderful.
But I think that one of the things that I would like to do is to be able to take a trip, to be able to go somewhere at like an education trip, mm-hmm, like go to New York City and see a Broadway show, go to 9/11, the monuments there. Now, most of our kids are from this area, so a lot of them probably have already done that. But that's just an example.
Sure.
I mean, we've had bowling nights. We've gone out and gone bowling. We haven't done a lot of it, but we've done it. you know, but those are the types of things, events, to where you go, like we have a golf outing, you know, where the guys can go play golf, together. So, I mean, those are just small little things. But I would like to do more. I remember one of the coaches, the coaches in the Midwest, I mean, they took their kids skiing. They had like lessons on skiing and you know, it's small, you know, they, wherever they were, but that's something that builds, you know, some team camaraderie. The more things you can do together, even if it's just going to the movies, you know, or just having random, I've had the team over to the house. I don't do it a lot, but I've had them over at the house. Those mm-hmm. are type team building, type activities. There's just a number of things you can do. I think the resources can dictate what you can and can't do, which is important, but I think it's, you know, just doing, if you just do one thing, you know, right. one thing's better, you know, than nothing. We don't, again, resource wise, I mean, if you have extra money somewhere to buy them, get them some gear that they like, you know, the swag mm-hmm. as they call it, you know, you make them feel important. So those are some things that cross my mind. Again, I don't think we do as good a job as we probably should, but we do the best we can. And, you know, but again, the teams that are able to do that certainly benefit from it.
No, I like that. Well, and, you know, in the back of my mind, I was thinking about your hard competition in the fall, the Bronc Buster. I think that's another good one, because when you go through hard things together, you develop that sweat equity. And I think that's always a good thing.
Yes. I mean, any little thing that you can get them to do together is beneficial. And a lot of times you don't notice it. They don't notice it, but it does build the team, gets them a little closer. Mm-hmm. They don't really recognize it, but it is, you know, it does happen.
Sure. For sure. So let's go into you. So you get into the season and things are rolling. You guys are playing a couple days a week. What is your like process on making sure you're conducting practice efficiently in season? So even now, you said, you know, you have a really good pulse for, you know, being a head coach and for the team, because you've done it for a long period of time, and you're very like intentional about noticing that, because you're like, yeah, we're just, you know, the guys are a little tired. They've been playing since January. And, you know, I found myself going the opposite side of like, okay, like we're not where we need to be. We need to do more. We need to do more. We need to do more, things like that. And I feel myself doing that too. And I'm obviously, this is your two as a head coach for me. And so just understanding that and understanding your team, I think is a vital thing. And, you know, it's, I would love to know, like, as the season progresses, what your process is on deciding when to push and when to pull. And then just, you know, if you've got any nuggets or tidbits on, hey, I noticed X, Y, or Z, or if we played X amount of games or at some, you know, if you pay attention, I think people can have a feel for that. But it's also easy to get caught up in, hey, we've got a couple days off. We need to get in as much as we can while we can. And, but yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. We can wrap on that for a little bit.
Well, the season starts, you know, usually with a trip down south, a number of trips. Like this particular year, we'll go to East Carolina and we'll leave on a Thursday morning very early, try to get down there, and we'll try to practice on their field, you know, if time allows and weather allows and all those things, which will give us an opportunity to get outside, see the ball, move around a little bit, get acclimated to what's going on. I think when we do travel, we try to get there as early as we can, you know, if time allows. So we're, you know, acclimated to the area as best we can. Plus, it gives them a little bit more of a feel like, okay, I'm being treated well. We're you know, we're not rushing into the hotel in the middle of the night, getting up in the morning and playing a doubleheader. You know, we try to give them plenty of time to relax, enjoy the trip, enjoy each other, get in the hotel, get to the practice field, get to dinner. So early in the season, we try to be consistent with that. Once we, you know, we go on our spring break, which is usually a 10 or 11 day trip, which is a, you know, team building in itself. You know, you're gone for an extended period of time. I mean, you have to depend on each other, which is important. But as far as like the schedule, breakfast in the morning, you know, we vary it depending on the night before when the game was. We try to be fair, you know, get them at breakfast at 9 o'clock, 8:30, 9 o'clock. We don't set a time, but we do say, hey, you need to be down by 9 o'clock, or 9:30, whatever we decide the night before. we usually have a meeting, you know, before we go to the field, about what to expect or what we think to expect. And, you know, like a pregame type talk. And we may have that the night before, depending on how many days we've been there. And then you play the game, you review the game at some point at the end. One of the things that we are going to incorporate this year is what's called a well, better, how. So at the end of the game, each player is going to put in, you know, what they did well, you know, what can they do better, and how are they going to do it? You know, so something like a kind of a self-assessment of where they are within the game. So we're going to try that this year. But as far as our schedule, as the season progresses, we try to be smart in our practices and not overdo it. We try to obviously stress the things we're struggling at, the things that we need to improve on. But it's just a constant day-to-day, you know, refocus, reflect, reassess, practice it, improve it. You know, all the way to the end, as the season goes on, it's a long year, 50 games, 50 plus games, depending on where you're at. In our case, some years it's high 40s, low 50s. You know, we dial it back a little bit. I coach probably less. I don't coach them as hard in May as I do in March. You know, because once we get to May, we're kind of, that's who we are. And we sort of let them play. And so that's kind of like been my philosophy over the years. That sort of just occurred. Like, I always felt like, okay, I can't really do anything now in the sense that I'm not going to change much. This is who we are. Let's be consistent. Let's just stay the course, mm-hmm. and not get to go up and down. Just be consistent,
right.
a gradual climb, but not overwork them. You know, you really just have to pay attention to what you think they're
right.
feeling. And then you can also ask them, like, what do you think? Like, what do you guys need a day off today? What do you want to do? And they may say, hey, can we hit for an hour? Sure. Okay. That's what we'll
right.
do. And then they
right.
feel like, okay, I have some ownership here. So I feel like, and that gives me the freedom. It makes me feel like, okay, they have a say in our success with the team. And I think that's important. So
right.
that kind of happens throughout the year. We pick and choose. Now, some days the coach has got to make a call, and that's just right. the way it's going to be. And I think they accept that too. So
perfect. Yeah. And I think that's a good leadership development area too, of like when those guys can come up to you and say, hey, Coach Davis, like we haven't brought it lately. We need a day, but we're going to be bringing it, I promise, in 2 days.
Yeah.
And I think, is that something that they've done in the past?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I had okay. one young man call me and say, Coach, we need to get so-and-so in the lineup. And I'm like, okay. So what do I do? Mm-hmm. I go right to my assistant coaches and said, hey, I had a player call me, said we need to get this guy. And I can't disagree with him. There's reasons why we haven't, but
mm-hmm.
okay, what do you think? And they say, hey, if that's what they want, if they're going to play better because of that. Okay. So you gotta put your ego mm-hmm. aside. Don't worry about it. I mean,
sure.
like, look, you're still making the call, but at the end of the day, you know, we want to do what's best for the team. We want to do what's best for the program. We want to do what's best for, you know, the individual, but the team comes first.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
But when you have a player, you know, who probably went to his teammates and said, hey, we got to talk to coach about this. I encourage that. I want that. And I want them to, you know, now come in, now be professional about it. Don't come in, you know, with your hair on fire
right.
and just,
right.
you know, just hang on. We're listening to you. So being a good listener, I think, is important too. And I've tried to do a better job of that. And I have. And I think it's contributed to our success.
No, that's good. All right. So, you know, well, and my point to that was the only truly way to build leadership is to give them opportunities to lead, you know, and I think that they can learn about it. They can do it. But at the end of the day, it's so complex that it's so hard when we don't give them opportunities. So I've been looking for those too. And I've jotted down a couple notes from you to give our, you know, we call it a leadership council or just some leadership training captains and giving them more opportunities and more say, and especially assistants too. I'm trying to do better at giving assistants different jobs and giving them some opportunities to lead. And I think, you know, it's always a good thing whenever we can have shared ownership within the team.
Absolutely. I, and I think it's just a, it's a thing you have to overcome. And you know, it's funny too. Every coach that I interviewed when they were young, they were, you know, they're going to, we're going to do it this way. I'm going to work them. I'm going to work them hard. I'm not going to be as, there's going to be no interpersonal relationships at all. You know, I'm just going, this, I'm the coach, you're the player. And when I say you do this, you do this. You know, there's not going to be any meetings. We're going to play it the way I want to play it. And I think over time, everyone's realized that I didn't have to do it that way. But I think you don't know that, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And then now, once you have experience and you realize, listen, I don't have to be that way to get actually more out of them.
Right.
And so I think it's a really intriguing topic, just to, you know, coaching, you're not coaching soft, but you're being more personable with them and trying to help them understand that you are important and that I can make you better. Now, some days I'm going to have to push you. Now you understand that. How do you want me to coach you? That's another question. How do you want me to coach you when you're not doing well? When you're not playing well, you're not hustling. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to say? How do you want me to do? Do you want me to, you know, do you want me to call your name out? Do you want me to, you know, yell and scream at you in front of everyone? Probably not. But I want you to tell me, like, what do you want me to do? Now you tell me. And you'll be surprised that they'll sit there and they'd probably be like almost dumbfounded to a point because they're not used to that. But you want them to tell you, like, if a kid, like, here's a story that I use and I remember. I'm a big Green Bay Packer fan.
Okay.
And Bart Starr was the, you know, the famous quarterback of the 60s of the Lombardi Packers. And there was a practice one day where he made a mistake and Lombardi just jumped him in front of everybody, like, just, you know, lit into him. So at some point, later on in that practice, Bart went over to Coach Lombardi and said, "Coach, can I meet you in the office after practice?" And he said, "Sure, absolutely." And so practice ends. They go to the meet, go to the office, and Bart comes in and says, "Coach, if you want me to lead these men, you know, you can't rip me. You can't criticize me in front of them on the field. Now, I can take your ripping. I can take it. But do it in the office. Don't do it on the field." And he said he never yelled at him again. Never. So the great Vince Lombardi, you know, take a page from a guy that people think, hey, this is the way it's done. I'm going to do it my way. And that's really how he did it. However, you know, when push comes to shove, when he knows what's best for the team, you got your leader, your quarterback, who you believe in, is telling
he's earned it.
Back off of me a little bit, you know, we're going to be better if you do that. And Lombardi's smart enough to understand, okay, hey, my fault. I mean, that was the story Bart Starr had told. And I always remembered that. And I think that's something that's very important that we can learn from. Your best players. I mean, one of the theories is if you ride your best player, you know, you can ride anyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it. Yes, you're right. There's a time and place. So you got to be aware of that. You got to be able to read the room. You got to be able to see the, you know, the emotional level there. So very, very interesting topic to discuss. And people are afraid that if they don't get on them, like really get on them, we're going to fail. I'm not doing my job. There's just so much to it. It's really interesting.
Right. No, for sure. So with that, I got a couple quick hitters before you go, and I'd love to, you know, pick your brain more, but I know we're trying to keep it brief here. And you know, I basically could talk to you probably every day and we wouldn't uncover all of the cool things that you guys do. But what's a drill that your players love that we can steal from you?
Wow. Okay. That's an interesting one. I don't know how many drills they love where we're actually laughing and running around I'm trying to think of a drill. I saw the question. I thought about it. Drills that they have fun doing. Anytime that you can put a competition together where there's a team A against team B, or, you know, this group against that group, whether it be, hitting the ball the other way, you know, putting like maybe not obstacles, but targets in the field with screens. We're hitting the ball the other way. And how many guys can hit that screen off the team? You know, trying to create as much little mini competitions in practice, I think that that's fun for them. They seem to gravitate towards that. So when there is a competition, you know, in terms of the baseball aspect of it, I know our pitchers do a lot of drills with the football where a guy's covering a guy, you know, he's running and he's covering him, you know, like a defensive back. I always a little worried that they're going to get hurt.
Pitchers are athletes, right?
Yeah. So I've got one eye open, the other eye closed, just hoping that nothing happens, but they seem to enjoy that. But anything that creates some type of winner loser, they seem to enjoy. One of the things I've done, and again, you make things up as you go. Sometimes we take a player who's kind of the slowest player on the team, and we put him somewhere in a running contest against someone and give him like a 50-yard head start or a 30-yard head start. And then you pick like two or three players to race against him. And then the rest of them get to decide who they think's going to win. Slow guy or the, one of these other three or two or whatever number you decide. And then you have them move around on the wherever we're at in the gym or outdoors. And of course, the team that loses has to do a little extra running, you know, so they really get like, hey, if Michael is the slow guy and say, listen, Mike, you better not lose this. I'm pulling for you. And they get over here. I mean, they're rooting for their teammates to catch them, or they're rooting for their teammates to pass them or him to win. That's fun. That becomes fun. And I do that on occasion. At the end of a hard workout when their tongues are hanging out, maybe after a good conditioning session. And I found that sometimes, you know, livens them up and gets them going. We did something the other day, in a meeting, and I picked this up somewhere. I read it somewhere. Always have to start the meeting with something fun or something that gets their attention. So we found a YouTube video, of little kids dancing, and not a little catcher, he was dancing. You've probably seen it. We pretended. They said, hey, I did some research, we were looking for something, and we found this, and this is our catcher. We said his name, and this is him when he was in Little League. So for the next 30 seconds they laughed, and they had the meeting started, they were smiling. It wasn't like, oh, I gotta go to this daggone meeting with Coach Davis, you know. There was something to the meeting, and they got there. It was fun. And then every meeting that we have, we try to keep at 20 minutes if we can, no more than 20.
Oh, that's good.
If we can. So we do that. And another thing that I think helps, and I'm not sure if this is part of your quick hitters here, is that we try to do everything with a certain time. That's a crazy number. Like like bus leaves at 1:06. Practice starts at 3:17 or 3:01. Okay. I got that from Tony Mason, a football coach from Arizona back in the 70s, a motivational talk that he gave that I heard on a cassette tape that was given to me by one of my players' parents back in the early 90s. And I still use that today. And it's kind of a form of exactness. Like, hey, when we say, you know, 3:20, 3:22, we mean 3:22. It's not around 3:20, it's 3:22. That's exactly when we're starting. And I think that's kind of a form of motivation. And I think they laugh at it, but then they remember. You know, they remember what time practice is.
Sure. You know,
5:35 AM, 5:34 AM, 5:32 AM. You remember that. So those are some little tidbits that we use along the way to help, you know, build, you know, teamwork, understanding, standards, expectations, those types of things.
I love it. Really good. Second question is, what is the latest thing that you've learned that's made you a better coach?
Well, I read a book. I should have read it 20 years ago, but I read it about a year ago. It's called How to Win Friends and Influence People. by Dale Carnegie.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read that book, first of all, it was written in 1936, and it's been updated, you know, several times. And I thought, okay, the one thing that I have tried to do is to listen to other people, ask them questions, be interested in what they do, and just keep that going.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm not interested. I don't want you to know about me. I want to learn about you. You know, I want to make, you know, you're important. So I want to learn more about you. I want to be interested in what you're interested in. You know, so as Dr. Gilbert would say, don't be interesting, be interested.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that I've tried to do, and I think it works. And when you meet someone new, or you're talking to someone, just keep asking them questions. Where'd you go on vacation? What does your dad do? Where are you from again? You know? Yeah, I've been there. Is that still, mm-hmm. whatever. So they, you know, so you become someone they like, and then when they like you, they'll do more for you.
For sure.
You know, and you see that all the time. So if you need somebody to help you, the people who like you will help you. Who helps people Absolutely. That they don't like?
Right.
You know, reluctantly, maybe in the job situation, but
sure.
So I think for me, that's one of the things that I've tried to do, is to be more open with my players, learn more about them, you know, be in conversations on their level, you know, what movies do they like? What songs do they like? Hey, you know, I love those shoes you got on, which I would never wear, right? But I love them. They're great. Where can I get me some of those? You know, so kind of get on their level. And I think that's important. So I've tried to do that more and more, and I think it's helped.
No doubt. I'm with you. And last question for you, in this, you know, this is something that you can either take it from lately, or you could take it from, you know, 30 years ago. And so what is one thing, or the one thing, that you feel like you've implemented that's made the biggest impact in your program?
Well, I think for them to realize, in terms of implementing, in terms of actual, like, you know, the strategy and the X's and O's of baseball or any sport are important. But I think the leadership aspect, learning, you know, how to be a servant leader, a more serving leader, to let them know that I'm on their side and I'm here to help you get better. I mean, that's important. That's more important than probably anything that we've done. But as far as implementing, say, a baseball aspect, you know, the way we take batting practice during our practices, where we incorporate as many things as possible, base running, defense, infield, outfield, you know, situational hitting. I think that's probably one, if you picked a baseball actual drill skill, that's probably the one thing we do the best, or one thing I think that we've implemented that has helped us. You know, we can do a number of things on the bases to react to the ball, the hitter's hitting in a certain situation, whether it be hit and run, runner at second, less than 2 outs, runner at third, less than 2 outs, infield up, you know, what are we looking for at the plate? You know, two strike hitting, hitting with a 2-1 count, 3-1 count, hitting curve balls, hitting left-handers, moving, you know, moving the ball around, outfielders, you know, creating situations for them without them having to throw the ball. They got to verbally call it out. I mean, that is probably the one thing that we've implemented in, I'd say, probably, you know, 15 years into my career, that I think has made a huge difference in our practices. It has a lot of flexibility. You can put a guy at third and he can react to the down angle contact,
mm-hmm.
or he can have the infield up and see it through. The infield obviously up with a runner at third. There's things we do with our base running. The infield can play double plays. Every ground ball is a double play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, runner first, hit and run, run a hit, you know, whatever. The pitcher's throwing the ball, he throws the ball in the dirt, the guy reads it. So you can incorporate a lot of things. And it moves very quick for a freshman, mm-hmm. you know, because they're not used to it. because it goes fast. It can go fast. But I think that's the one baseball thing. And the non-baseball thing is just, you know, the relationship of, you know, letting them know that, hey, I'm here to help, you know, you get to where you want to get to. But where do you want to go? I can't, where do you want to go? So those are two things, I think.
Oh, I love that. Well, Coach Davis, I appreciate your time and your willingness to answer questions so thoroughly too, because there's so many layers to having a good program, and you did a great job of providing context with some of the things that you provided today. And I appreciate that. And you are an open book. I love this conversation, and let me be the first to say thank you again. But I did want to, you know, leave the mic open for you if there's anything else that you'd like to discuss or anything else that you'd like to tell the listeners before you go. The mic is all yours.
Well, the one thing that I wanted to, as a coach, a head coach, I mean, there's a lot of things that I think that are important out there. If you're interested in leadership and coaching and ideas, go to my website, drbarrydavis.com, sign up, subscribe. I do a newsletter, I do a blog, my consistency is usually twice a month, and we usually send that out to subscribers. Follow me on Twitter, at Barry Davis 42 and Dr. Barry Davis 42 on Instagram. I do have a YouTube channel that you can check out, and there's going to be more coming from that here in the near future, as I, continue to build, what I would say is my brand in terms of coaching and leadership and things that I want to do in the future. So check all those things out, and I appreciate it if you do.
Thank you so much for listening to Ahead of the Curve. If you would do us a huge favor, leave a rating or review wherever you are listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone and tag us on social media. That would help us so much with growing the show and helping others to stay ahead of the curve.